Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to today's All Sides Weekend when we talk about books. And we have three experts, three self-described book nerds, publishers, bloggers, librarians, and we have you. We're going to be asking for you to call in with your recommendations or to ask a question of our panel, who are as follows. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com, which is indispensable to anyone who loves to read. Robin Nesbitt is the director of the Columbus Library's Hilliard branch, and she is here with the Columbus Library's current Quick Picks. And I'm pleased to welcome back to the program Eric Obanoff, who is the publisher of $2 Radio Books, a local imprint. Eric has some terrific news as well for us that we'll make you wait for. Hang on one second. Cassie Rose, I want to start with you because you always have my motto in life is if Cassie Rose says read this book, I read this book, and I'm never disappointed. So what do you have to recommend for us today?
Well, I'm torn between talking about two choices, but I'm going to talk about one that I just wrote about on the blog. And it's not a new book. It's Birdsong by Sebastian Fox. And I have been wanting to read it for a long time. It's a masterpiece. I mean, that's all I can say about it. And I can tell you that the centerpiece of it is World War I. It's a compelling story about World War I, but it goes further than that. Focuses on a young man, and it starts in 1910 when he's on a business trip to France, and he gets involved with a torrid affair with the owner's wife in a factory. And he gets you all involved in that in 1910, and then in 1916, this young man is in the war. What is so wonderful about the writing in this book and about the characterization is that Fox involves you in the world of what is going on. And he doesn't do it in a way that you're overwhelmed by the war, because we know that World War I, the trench warfare, was so difficult. But he involves you so much that I jumped about three times when I was reading the book and people approached me. I was so involved with what was going on. The humanity in the story, the humanity of this young man in the story, and touches you. And it's also very profound messaging. He also takes you years ahead to 1979, when the granddaughter of this Stephen Raisford, the protagonist, is reading his diaries. And it's a generation of people who don't know anything about World War I or really don't care about it or are clueless about it. So that perspective brings back this story of what it's like to be in war, to have fought for your country, to have ancestors who have done that, and let alone the moving and profound messages that came out of World War I.
What made you reach back to this book? Because as you mentioned, it's not a new book. Sebastian Fox is a very well-known writer. Mm-hmm. He's not really a marquee name. Mm-hmm. But what made you go back to this specific book?
I think it's because for years I had been seeing it written about. Maybe someone would mention it. Someone would talk about it as a masterpiece. I saw it in all of my bookstore shopping, my rare book shopping, and something in me said, I need to read this book. So I've had it for about 3 or 4 years. And in the summertime, I reach for books that are on the reading table that go back in time and to catch up. And this was the first one this summer that I picked up.
The way you describe this book leads me to think it's a wonderful read. It's mm-hmm. a can't put it down, which I think in the summer a lot of people mm-hmm. look for in a book.
Yes, and I was very glad to see that someone made a comment on the blog post to the point where she was saying it was so absorbing for her in the same way that I'm talking about it, and that she saw it as a masterpiece and that it's heartbreaking in many ways. It's surprising, too. You don't really know what's going to happen. And when I say it's you don't know what's going to happen, I mean that even on an emotional way. I want to say something that probably people will shoot me for saying, because All the Light We Cannot See was such a popular book and everybody loved it, and it is a very good book. But this book goes deeper. This book mm-hmm. is, in terms of talking about the way it talks about the characters, how they interact, and the way that you feel leaving the book and understanding, I keep thinking of the word humanity, and how we react with one another.
The book is Birdsong by Sebastian Fox. I think it's been out for 20 or so.
I want to say that 1996.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It is Cassie Rose's recommendation, which means you should read it. And you heard it here first on today's All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Robin Nesbitt is here. She is the branch manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. Busy time for the library with new branches opening right and left.
Correct. We just opened our new Northside branch yesterday, so it's now open. It's on High Street in the campus area. It's also summer reading club time, so we've got over 40,000 people signed up. And I want to remind everybody, it's not just kids. I have a lot of people come in and say, I wish I could do summer reading club. I'm like, it's 0 to 99, folks, and there's great prizes for adults. So you readers out there, if you're going to read anyway, you might as well get some prizes for it. So,
how do you get into the club?
It's on the website. It's all online this year. So columbuslibrary.org, for front page, there's a little blue box that says summer reading. Click on it and sign up. So,
very good. Now, Quick Picks is something the library does, as I understand it. Well, I should know because I do it all the time. They are hot titles, yeah, bestsellers, books everybody wants to read that you make available sort of in bulk.
Yep.
First come, first served. You keep them a few weeks. You take them back. You can't renew them.
Bingo.
Whatever.
Yep.
So, you have John Grisham. Talk
yep.
to me.
This is a very interesting book because everybody thinks, oh, John Grisham, it's the new legal thriller. This is not a legal thriller. He and his wife own a house, I forget exactly where, but they thought up this plot as they were driving to their summer home. And essentially, talk about a book for book nerds. The plot is that some books go missing from the Princeton University's library. And so it's like $25 million worth of books that go missing. And so this guy, Bruce, owns a bookstore down on Camino Island in Florida. And somehow he gets caught up in this book caper. So, and I read a review with Grisham. He like I said, he and his wife plotted, you know, figured the plot out. And he was going to have her help write it. She's like, oh, no, I'm not helping you write that thing. I'll help you dream it up. But
I'll buy the house. You
write
the book.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think for folks who want a summer read, who like books, I think, and it's a, and I think, you know, Grisham now, I think it's always interesting to watch authors where they've been writing for a while and they're like, you know what? I got enough money now. I'm going to write whatever I feel like.
He did a fun book about Christmas,
he
too.
He did.
About people
you're right.
Hate Christmas.
To be fair. And he also wrote a book about a football player in Italy, the pizza something, you know. But so, yeah, he has branched out a little bit. So Camino Island by John Grisham, it just came out here just like, I think either this week or last week.
I think the manuscripts are by Scott Fitzgerald's.
I think the actual
manuscripts that are lost or stolen out of the Princeton Library.
Yeah, you're probably right. I actually haven't read the book yet because I'm like, but I, yeah, it doesn't say here for sure. It just says something about, you know, heist $25 million bookstore. Read it.
Caper. Read it. Caper's a good word
caper,
for that.
There you go.
Quick Picks at the Columbus Library. Robin Nesbitt has a sack load of them, and we're going to get back to Robin later in the program. I want to bring back and welcome again Eric Obanoff, who is the founder and publisher of $2 Radio, which is a book imprint based here in Central Ohio. I think you and your wife set that up. Am I correct?
Yeah, my wife and I started in 2005.
Why?
So, why?
Good way to starve. Why? Why are you doing it?
I think initially the idea was I felt as though my appetite as a reader was not being met. I mean, the types of books that I was attracted to, they were becoming harder and harder to find. And I just ended up going to bookstores instead and looking for independently published titles, which seemed to be the more adventurous or experimental type of work. And I ended up, you know, falling in love with some of these independent presses like Akashic Books, where they had a tremendous imprint, this Urban Surreal series that I absolutely love.
You brought us a wonderful writer from South Africa last year.
Correct.
Who did a terrific novel that which I liked very much. What was the name of it?
I'm asking. You're here at this hand motion. See, I don't know what's going on.
What do I have to do? Get signed? Great book,
though. Yeah, that book was called The Reactive.
Thank you.
Yes, and it was by a South African writer named Masende Nchanga.
Who sat in this chair.
Who sat, where Cassie's sitting right now. Correct, yes.
Don't remember the title. I do remember liking the book. Isn't that a kick? You can't remember the book anymore, but you remember if you liked it or not.
Right.
I mean, that's true for almost anything you read now. I read nowadays.
Right.
I think it's a function of being old. Never mind. Anyway, Eric, when I first met you, you told me that when you began publishing, like you and your wife would sit in the living room on the floor and stuff envelopes yourselves, and just, you did everything yourself. So where are you now? And what does a publisher do? What do you do? people think, well, he does books.
Right.
So he must be writing books, which I'm sure you can or might do, but there's more to it than that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're like Penguin Random House, but really small. And so writers submit their work to us, and if we like it enough, then we make the author an offer. And from there, we work with them on editing the manuscript itself, which these can be even like big picture edits from, you know, like, I didn't buy this character, just drop them entirely from the book, or you need to change the ending, or this didn't feel convincing, etc. And we work with that directly with the author. And then they revise the manuscript, and then we go about actually publicizing it. We have a distributor who sells our books to stores, but we present them to the sales team to do that type of thing. And then we do the publicity.
Now you have a sales team. Now you have distributors. Now you have you're up and running with a big – with a real company now.
Well, sure, yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm asking these questions.
Yeah, we got major distribution in 2008.
Okay.
And typically, you know, like our – books, our print runs go anywhere from 2,500 to 5,000 copies or so. But we had our big hit last year was a book called The Gloaming, which was a New York Times notable book for the year for 2016 by a tremendous writer named Melanie Finn, who there were a couple of reviews that compared her to Patricia Highsmith.
Wow.
I think the literary fiction, suspenseful mystery thriller.
So tell us your big news, Mr. Parsons Avenue.
All right. Yeah, the big news is we're planning on opening up a bookstore, bar, cafe on the south side of Columbus at 1124 Parsons Avenue in September. And we plan to stock almost exclusively independently published titles. I don't say exclusively. I'm saying almost exclusively. So, you know, if we do stock a big corporate book, that it doesn't come back to bite me. But the focus will be on independently published literature, which, as I was saying, tends to be the more adventurous, experimental stuff. And what I think of as the type of work that's really like pushing our literary culture forward.
You will attract a lot of people who love books, and I think this is a good town for that. Mm-hmm. I think this is a good city for that. Gramercy Books as an independent bookstore has boomed since it opened recently. And Cassie, we'll talk about your appearance there in a little while. But I think independent books are coming back. You've chosen a transitional, shall we say, neighborhood, to do that, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. Do you have to? I'm going to love having a cafe and stuff with the bookstore. But I'm wondering, is that the business model now? Do you have to do that if you're having an independent bookstore? Do you have to entice people in with goodies and coffee?
Well,
I think it's not bad. I'm just asking.
Sure. I mean, these are supplemental. It's all meant to like enhance the experience. So, you know, even the libraries now have cafes.
Well, the big chains do too. I mean, all the big book and mortar stores do it.
I mean, so as opposed to having a bunch of merchandise, keychains, postcards that we're selling, you know, I do think there is a trend now. We based our model off of a bookstore in Dallas called Wild Detectives. But there are, like the Seattle Stranger, their alternative paper in January did a story about the trend in bookstores to sell alcohol and food.
When do you expect to open?
September.
Okay. And
on our website, we have a bunch of information.
What's the stock going to be, really? I mean, when I walk into your bookstore, aside from the fact that it's an indie bookstore and that's wonderful, but alas, rare, what's gonna be different about yours?
Well, one of the things that I'm really excited about, you know, also another thing we do on the publishing side of things is we design the books, you know, which is a lot of fun and we put a lot of time and effort into. And I think that our books are pretty well designed. But in terms of like having books, you put all this time and effort into designing a book and then it sits on a shelf and all you see is the spine.
The spine, right.
So the plan is to have as much as possible have books face out with the covers as opposed to just be staring at a bunch of spines like, you know, squinting to try to make out an author's name. So we'd like to have the covers facing out and facing up on the tables. We'd like to be introducing readers to independent publishers they might not be familiar with. We plan on having entire shelves dedicated to some of these publishers, like Small Beer Press or Coffee House Press, along with a little biographical note saying who they are and why you should check out their work. Because a lot of this stuff with independent publishing, it is a lot of these presses have brand identities. There's typically only one or two editors who are acquiring books at these imprints. So for us, I'm the only one who's acquiring new manuscripts. So if you like one of our books, then you probably like most of them. And that's the same, you know, across independent publishing in general.
We're going to come back, take a break right now and come back very quickly to talk more about books in Columbus and reading in Columbus and what people are reading, what you are reading. Feel free to give us a call, 614-292-8513 with your recommendations or questions for the panel. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Don't go away. We are back with today's edition of All Sides Weekend, talking about books with Eric Obanoff, the publisher of $2 Radio. Eric is opening a new bookstore on Parsons Avenue in September. He's been telling us about. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and her indispensable blog for anyone who loves books and reading is thelongestchapter.com. And Robert Nesbitt is the director of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. She's here with the library's Quick Picks and all news about the library. So far, we've discussed Sebastian Falk's novel Birdsong, John Grisham's new Camino Island, which is a library Quick Picks, The Gloaming is a book that was very much admired by Eric Obanoff, who you brought that book out.
We published it, yes.
By Michelle Finn.
And Melanie Finn, sorry.
Melanie Finn, and your new shop is going to be at 1124 Parsons Avenue. Cassie Rose, give me another... Well, first of all, let's backtrack a little bit. You are going to be at Gramercy Books this coming Tuesday night, is that right?
That's correct. It's 7 o'clock.
That's on Main Street in Bexley. Mm-hmm. If you know where the movie theater is.
Oh, it's right across the street from the Bexley Public Library.
Okay.
And there's ample parking on
yes,
the street.
Yes, there is ample parking. It's a lovely shop. It's a wonderful shop.
Yes, it
what
is.
What will you be doing there?
I'm going to be leading a discussion about Elizabeth Strout's new book, Anything is Possible. And I just hope everybody comes and just has, if you've read the book, if you've not read the book, I led a discussion in February where I had a big mix. And some people came to just listen, and then they left wanting to read the book. I think Elizabeth Strout gives a lot to talk about in her new book, but also in the previous book, Lucy Barton. And just in the way that she writes some of the issues that she takes on about class privilege and also about poverty and about growing up in small towns.
Lucy Barton is in this new book as well with lots mm-hmm. of back and front mm-hmm. story. With the, mm-hmm. I read the book because you told me to, and I thought it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I'll be there Tuesday night to hear you at Gramercy Books. So what else did you bring us to read?
I think I'm going to talk about Stephen Florida, which is published by Coffee House Press. And it's by Gabe Habash. Gabe Habash grew up in Columbus and graduated from the Columbus Academy. He's now in New York, and he's the fiction editor for Publishers Weekly. I have to qualify this. There's a lot about I want to say about the book, but I can't say it on the air because the protagonist is he's a college senior, small town, North Dakota. He's pursuing his goal of wrestling. It's the championship, the Division IV, NCAA wrestling in the 133 weight class.
He just spoke at Gramercy Books, this writer, because a friend of mine is a friend of his and raved about it. So it's all mm-hmm. coming back. Talk to
okay.
me more. Yeah, it's, great. Yes.
The voice in the book is one of the – it's outrageous because he's filled with anger. He's filled with, I'm going to make this goal. He's brash. He's gets in the face of everyone. He doesn't want anyone to get in his way. And so you feel like he's a little self-destructive. But at the same time, you can see this is his last chance. It's his senior year, and he wants to win this goal. You also can see he's a little broken from his past, and he's a loner and doesn't know how to have relationships. So it takes you through the first semester, and he's going through the workouts and the practice. And there's not much that goes on, but it's his voice and his personality, his internal world that keeps you turning the pages and think, this guy is cracked up. And then he gets injured, and he's benched, and the coaches are telling him he's just got to wait and see. And he gets even more angry, more crazy. And he goes out.
Why am I having a deja vu listening to this?
So to give you an example, he gets a rubber gorilla mask that he puts on, and he goes after, he starts menacing the wrestler who injured him that put him on the bench. So, you know, it's insane. And the classes he's taking, I mean, one of them is called What is Nothing? Hmm. So you can see the humor in this book, which is really sort of off the charts. So anyway, you follow him through all of this and you get to the competition. And really, are there some brilliant moments in there in terms of how Habesh has created this character and his battle with himself and with everyone around him. It does go on a little long in places, but I think it's worth traveling through those sections.
If
in the middle.
He were younger, it would be a Sean Penn movie. You know, if Sean Penn were younger, mm-hmm. maybe 25 years mm-hmm. ago, it would have been a Sean Penn movie.
If you just read the first page, you're going to see what the language is.
Okay. You don't want to read some for it?
I wanted to quote it in a review I did about the book, and I thought, I can't do that.
All right. Well, you've intrigued all of us. Yeah, the title is Stephen Florida. The author is Greg Habash. Gabe Habash, who has a connection to Columbus.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Well, that's that probably will become a quick pick after this show. speaking of quick picks, by the way, you've had Dan Shaun, the wonderful writer, mm-hmm. spoke at the library last week.
Yes.
I know had a terrific receptive crowd.
Right.
He was on the show last Friday.
Right.
We had a great chat with him. His novel was Ill Will. So
Ill
you're
Will.
bringing in more and more writers.
Correct.
Who else is coming?
An Ohio State professor, Shakirti.
He wrote a book about OSU in the 60s.
Right.
It's
yeah.
a terrific book.
Yeah, it's yeah. a Thursday night, I think, in July. And then Kimberla Lawson Roby will be there in August, I believe. So that'll be, and then we'll re-up next year and have more authors next year.
That's in the main branch
at
downtown.
The main library on the second floor. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
And give me a quick pick.
So I was lucky enough to get to go to Book Expo this year, and I got to hear Senator Franken talk about his new book. And this is a quick
Al Franken,
book.
Yeah.
Al Franken, giant of the Senate. And it's great to see that Al's back. So, you know, his first – when he ran for office, he basically cut out the comedy because he wanted to prove to everybody that he's serious. And, you know, he's a fascinating guy. He went to Harvard. He's really bright. The motivation to run for the Senate is just heartwarming because Paul Wellstone held the seat that he ran for, died in a plane crash, and the guy right. that won it was a guy named Norm Coleman. The first comment Norm makes, Al reads in the paper, of like, he's a 99% improvement over Paul. And Al was just like, this is ridiculous. Paul Wellstone's one of the nicest guys on the planet. How can you say that? He's like, I wonder what idiot's going to beat him. Well, the idiot was Al Franken. So he's in his second term, and so now he's written a book about running for the Senate and being in the Senate and what it's like. So he's a great speaker. He's a really intelligent man, and I'm so thankful that we have him in Washington, D.C. But yeah, this is a new quick pick. So, Giant of the Senate.
Giant of the Senate by Al Franken,
yep.
Which is not a novel.
No. It's all true.
And that is a quick pick from the Columbus Library.
That is, yes.
All right.
Yep.
Now, Eric, we haven't asked you yet about some of the titles you've been bringing out. So, why don't you give me a couple of, talk about a couple of the most recent books that $2 Radio has given us?
Sure. In May, we published our first book in translation. It was from the Slovak. It's by a writer named Jana Benova, and it won the European Union Prize for Literature in 2012-2013. It's translated by Janet Livingston, and it's about young members of the artist class in Bratislava, exploring like the post-socialist realities there. I think it's a very voice-driven book, which is really what attracted me to it.
How did it get to you?
So another thing that we do as a publisher oftentimes is we try to sublicense rights internationally. So for some of our books, we've had them translated into German by a publisher called Residence Verlag. And the editor there, you know, being familiar with our work and having acquired a few of the titles, she actually recommended to the author's agent that we could be a good home for her work. So they publish her in German. And the book had been Benova's work has been translated pretty widely across Europe, I think mostly as a result of having won the European Union Prize. Mm. But this is her first book that has been translated into English. Mm. I think if you like writers like Clarice Lispector, Renata Adler.
Give me the title again.
It's called Seeing People Off.
Same people off?
Seeing
off. People off.
Yeah.
Okay. That is from $2 Radio. Give me another one.
In July, we're out with a book called Found Audio. It's kind of a slippery, unsettling, metaphysical mystery by a writer named N.J. Campbell. And it follows an audio engineer, an audio analyst, who one day a mysterious man shows up with three audio cassettes and asks her to analyze them. He just says that he needs this analysis done immediately, and then he'll be back in 2 days to retrieve the cassettes. He just instructs her, don't copy them, don't do anything with them. But she's so unnerved by what she hears on the cassettes that she creates a transcription, and she sends them off to an editor friend of hers, which... the author...
Didn't James Comey do that recently?
Yeah. So, which is essentially what we're publishing. So there is the author's foreword and how he came in touch with the audio analyst record of the work, her introduction to the letter that she originally wrote to the editor, and then the actual transcription and analysis of the audio cassettes. And what's on the audio cassettes is it follows this adventure journalist who's maybe imagining things. He's pursuing this mysterious city of dreams that he keeps hearing about in different places. And he's not sure whether it actually exists or not. And he just becomes fascinated with it and maybe goes mad.
And America, what are you reading? I want some phone calls. Let's find out what you're reading. 614-292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Ask about what it is to set up a new independent bookstore. Ask that of Eric Albanoff, who's doing it in September. Cassie Rose is here. She is WOSU's book critic. And Robin Nesbitt is here from the Columbus Library with quick picks. We'd like to know what you're reading. I have on the top of my list a book I haven't read yet, but it is by an author who was on the faculty at The Ohio State University named Nick White. It's called How to Survive a Summer. It is a novel about a camp which apparently deprograms young gay people. Again, I haven't read it yet, but he acknowledges in the book Goddess Michelle Herman, who is on the faculty and a writer herself at The Ohio State University in creative writing. And if he does that, he's okay. He's regular. He's good with me. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Cassie Rose, you and I discussed last year a book about the pianist Van Cliburn called Moscow Nights, who Van Cliburn was a very big, tall drink of water from Texas who in 1959 won the Tchaikovsky International Competition for Piano at the height of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And what that what meant for politics at the time and his life. There is a new book on this topic, which is equally compelling, called When the World Stopped to Listen, Van Cliburn's Cold War Triumph and Its Aftermath by Stephen Isikoff. And I recommend that highly. And if you want to recommend books to us, 292-8513 or an email to allsides@wosu.org. Cassie Rose, recommend me something.
I'm going to start with, here's another, this is a good beach read, similar to Birdsong, or good summer read. New book by J. Courtney Sullivan. I've not read a lot of her books, or any of her other books, but she is a popular author. This one, Saints for All Occasions. This is a book that is a great Irish story.
Here we go.
It's Nora and Teresa, a small town in Ireland, come to Boston.
Oh, God.
Because
okay.
Nora's fiance is there and he did not get the farm back in Ireland. His younger brother did. So he's gone to America. So the story is about the two of them coming to America. But actually, it's much more than that because it starts out 50 years later from that when Nora has a big Catholic family and she's the matriarch, but there has been, and you know in the first chapter that she's not been in touch with her sister for 30 years, and her sister is a cloistered nun at an abbey in Vermont. Mm. So you have that, then you have the beginning of how they came and they're very close sisters. You know that something has happened over the years to cause the estrangement. So that's a little bit of the intrigue there.
I happen to know because it happened when the Irish don't like each other, when there's a feud, stand back. My grandfather and his brother-in-law didn't speak for 60 years and they forgot why, but they just didn't. So that book is called again.
It's called Saints for All Occasions. And there is something that happens in the very beginning that requires Nora to contact her sister in this cloistered, this closed abbey. It's, you know what it is? It's the atmosphere in the book. Yeah. It's one of those that has, you will look forward to reading this book at night. You will look forward to
reading it all afternoon. I am not going to die first. That's it. You're going to die first.
Yeah, you just can't, and you get involved in their lives, and that whole, it's that atmosphere. It's that Irish family atmosphere, and you get into that clan feeling and how they yearn back for Ireland, and then what has caused the feud, and then their sisters, and you just can't put it down.
Who's the author again?
It's J. Courtney Sullivan. I think readers of the, she wrote a book called Maine and the Engagements.
Yes,
and
Maine. I read. I remember that. It was a very good book. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'll certainly look forward to that. That's going to ring true for my family on many levels. We have some calls coming in. We have a call from Kathy in Columbus. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hey. Hi. Okay, I could recommend a book I'm almost finished with by Jeffrey Deaver called XO, about a young girl in the country music industry and her threatening, pursuing stalker fan. It's got a lot of twist to it. It's good. But why I called in, I have a question. I am totally puzzled how a book like Gone Girl could be on the bestseller list for months. I struggled through it. I thought it was poorly written. It was structurally, it was poor. Grammatically, it was poor. There were typos. There were punctuation errors. Now she's got a second book coming out. Everybody's going to flock to that one.
They are flocking to it.
Gone Girl is the first book I've ever read that the movie was better than the book.
Okay, Kathy. I have to say that I
agree with you. I was probably one of the few in the world that just did not, I didn't like the book. And I actually did not, I think Dark Places, her first book, is not very good. And I think it's because she gratuitously uses violence and foul language. And so that creates very much of a surface. Well, it does. It creates this surface. And she just doesn't work for the story. Now, again, I'm probably going to have people on the parking lot ready to shoot me after I'm going after two bestsellers. But I agree with you. And quite frankly, when I started to say that to a lot of readers, many people came up and said that they agreed that they did not feel that it was a very good book. Yet some people said, and I asked them, I said, what is it about it? And they just said, I just wanted to know how it ended.
I'll tell you what attracted me. I liked the book, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I thought if you can spin a good yarn, you are my friend. And I thought she could spin a good yarn. Now, there was a twist in it that really, I mean, I almost fell off the elliptical, which is not a sight you want to see I was reading that book.
And we talk a lot about this at the library. People read for different things. I mean, some people read for writing. Some people read for atmosphere. Some people just want the pages to turn. And so you have to just be aware that there are different books for different people, and you may not like. That's what makes it so difficult to suggest books, because something I like, you may hate. And something you love, I'm like, that is horrible. So you just have to be really cognizant of the fact that we don't all like the same things. That's why there's 32 flavors of Baskin-Robbins,
right?
That's
right. Absolutely right.
So, you know, some days I want to go home and I just want the pages to turn. I don't care how bad the writing is. I just want to be swept away. And so I think that's the appeal of some of the bestsellers.
And that book did that for me. Gone Girl, sweep me away. Yeah. Kathy, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate that. We have a call from Howard in Worthington with a recommendation. Hello, Howard. Go ahead.
Hi. I would like to recommend a book written by Dr. Bartholomew H. Sparrow, capital Sparrow. He's a professor of government at the University of Texas at Austin. He wrote a book called The Insular Cases and the Emergence of American Empire, and it has a lot to do with why over the years people on the island of Puerto Rico have either been treated like non-citizens or second-class citizens. And for people who don't know what the insular cases are, the word insular means pertaining to an island, and it's about 35 landmark U.S. Supreme Court cases between 1901 and 1923 that had to do with the rights of people living in these four new island territories that the United States had just recently taken away from Spain.
That book is getting a lot of attention. I know I've seen that book written up in several different journals. So, Howard, I do appreciate the recommendation. We do have to move on, but I do thank you very much for your call. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Book. We are going to take a quick break and come on back with your calls and more from our guests. Don't go away. Back. I'm Christopher Purdy. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Books. My usual beat is Classical 101. Once in a while, they let me walk across the corridor and visit with you and talk about books or arts and culture. Today, it's books with Robin Nesbitt, the director of the Columbus Library's Hilliard Branch, who brings us quick picks and more from the library. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and Eric Obanoff is publisher of $2 Radio Books here in Columbus and is opening a new bookstore on Parsons Avenue in September. Do you have a name yet for the shop?
Yeah, $2 Radio Headquarters.
Well, thank you very much, okay? That's at 1124 Parsons Avenue. Do you have an opening date yet? You said September.
We don't.
When the paint's dry, you
sure,
won't.
Sure, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But we'll have you on back.
I'll
before
make sure
then.
You get an invitation.
And we'll thank you. And yeah. I hope there'll be cookies. I know there'll be great books. But congratulations on that. That's
thank
terrific
you.
To have a bookstore in Columbus that caters to independent publishers and the people who love those books, and there are a lot of them. I think you'll do very well, and I think it's always good news when another independent bookstore comes
Absolutely.
Back and opens. And I think it's like vinyl records; they're back. LP is back. Everything old is new again and back again. We were talking a little bit off mic and getting a little contentious and having some fun about what people like to read as opposed to what may be considered literature or good books or whatever. I loved Gone Girl, and a lot of people did. It was a quick pick for a reason at the Columbus Library. But really, I mean, I think the world is made to accommodate people who like anything.
Right. I mean, I think having a discussion like this is healthy. That means people are interested in books and talking about books. And, you know, obviously, I don't want somebody necessarily telling me what to read. I want to be free. That's why I work at a public library. You know, I want to have access and provide access to everybody. So there are literary readers, there's genre readers, there's people who just read magazines. It's all okay. Yeah, you know? You're reading.
Now, we have a question from Kevin in Columbus. So put on your thinking caps here. Kevin is looking for a book about developing communities. Hi, Kevin. Hmm. Kevin, are you there?
I am. Christopher, are you there?
I am there.
Nice to talk to you.
You are looking for a book. Tell me what you're looking for.
Yeah, I actually just finished Ubuntu out of South Africa, and it's about how to build an intentional community using contributionism. And I'm just looking for another read to build off of that great read.
I recommend anything written by Dorothy Day.
Dorothy Day.
D-A-Y. Dorothy Day, who founded the Catholic Worker Movement and who was very much invested in building communities. And I'll leave it at that, but I recommend anything written by Dorothy Day. I think you'll find that interesting.
Awesome. I will get right to that. Thank
All
you
right.
Much.
Thank you very much.
Have a blessed day.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the call. We have a call from Barry in Groveport with a recommendation. Hi, Barry. You there?
Hi, Christopher.
Go ahead.
I am. I actually have four quick ones. One, Nick White, who you mentioned a few minutes ago,
yes.
is appearing at the Thurber Picnic a week from next Wednesday.
Cool.
I think it's July the 5th.
Well, maybe they'll invite me if they're listening.
Dogs.
Okay.
I just invited you. I work the ticket table, so you
Great.
Should come.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you there. And also, I finished Stephen Florida last night. It's a wonderful book. I'm surprised at how much psychology is in there from a writer who was admittedly pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good, and I recommend that. I also recommend for good summer reading two books, or any of the books, really, by Robin Yoakam, mm-hmm. a local
oh,
writer.
Oh, sure. Robin's been a guest on the show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A Welcome Murder and A Brilliant Death, his last two. I found both terrific and would be great reads for the summer.
Barry, thanks so much for the recommendation. We'll see you on July 6th. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate that.
See ya.
I'm Christopher Purdy. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. We're talking about books. A lot of people are talking about books. Let's see. I want to ask Robin Nesbitt about another quick pick.
Okay. Well, in the category of you can be dead and still get published, Michael Crichton's got a book out.
I didn't know. When did he die?
He passed away in 2008.
I thought he was too rich to die. Well, wow.
Well, you can still die and be rich, you know. Okay. So this one's called Dragon Teeth. And I think the manuscript, he had written it and then got it published. This is basically about a guy back in the 1800s. So it's archaeology. It's digging up dinosaurs back in a Yale student in 1876 goes west to dig up dinosaurs. So if you like, it's not, you know, it's not his, I want to say the futuristic Jurassic Park kind of thing. This really is about archaeology, and it really is, you know, it has some, you know, when I say realism to it, but he, you know, is published posthumously, and we've got it on our quick pick. So it's called Dragon Teeth by Michael Crichton. And I think this would be a good, you know, beach read, you know, turner, page turner kind of thing.
Do they say in his bio that he died? I mean, there's a picture of him, a young picture. I mean,
well, it has his birth 1942 to 2008.
Okay.
So
okay.
Was the author of the groundbreaking novel. So yeah, I think he passed away, had cancer, I think. Mm. And he's an interesting character. If people don't know, he actually trained to be a doctor.
He
didn't want to be a doctor. He wanted to write books, and he wanted to write bestsellers. And so he went and read like hundreds of books from the New York Times bestseller, you know, fiction, and then just turned around and started writing bestsellers, basically. So
clearly it worked for him.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So. Well, thank you very much
for that.
But
that goes to what we were talking about with Gone Girl, because he was clearly wanting to write a bestseller, not to write a good book.
Literary.
Right.
He wanted
that
someone
a
who
bestseller.
Could.
Right.
Right. He wanted to write a page turner. He wanted to.
Good books can be bestsellers.
Yes.
You have to be careful there.
They can, but very few literary books do get onto the bestseller list.
Well, now I'm going to do some research. Now I've got a challenge.
Yeah.
I think that's a discussion worth having in a future show.
I really do.
I think that would
be
very good.
Right.
We could have a readathon or sort of a duel.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Right.
Because my question would also be, what were the bestsellers in the mid-20th century, the golden age of publishing, when you had Hemingway and Fitzgerald and Bromfield and John Powell and all this? Were there bestsellers like ours, or do we have a potato chip reading kind of a segment of reading, and then we have, you know, the...
Yeah,
I don't know how to position it because, yes, bestsellers can be called great books maybe.
Speaking to that, I think in the mid-century it was a slower world. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think people actually wanted to absorb books more than they might do it now. I mean, I love quick picks. Mm-hmm. I love quick reads. I love recreational reading, and I think that didn't really exist so much. That's my guess in the 50s and 40s when Hemingway and Fitzgerald, and I just mentioned Catcher in the Rye, that was a huge bestseller in 1951 and still is, you know, 70 years later. That's just a theory I have. What do I know?
But I also think that this is why, I mean, I'm very excited about this bookstore on Parsons.
Yeah, I am too.
Because so many of the books that I'm trying to dig for, Coffee House, Gray Wolf Press, Bellevue Literary Press, that have these wonderful books that people don't get to them because they're not as exposed to them because they don't hit the bestseller list. Or maybe they don't have time to read the New York Times book review and realize that there are a lot of independent presses out there publishing extraordinarily good books.
Right.
And so now they can come to a bookstore and browse for them.
Well, they'll get the exposure now, thanks to you, mm-hmm. Eric. And that's the $2 radio...
Headquarters. And I do think, going back to what Cassie was saying, too, just about, you know, what makes a bestseller, I think that a lot of it, too, has to come down to the business mindset of the publishers who are releasing those books. You know, it's probably a lot easier to market the next Gone Girl than it is to market, I don't know, Jonathan Lethem's next book. Or The Reactive, exactly. Which is why, you know, when a book like Gone Girl is tremendously successful, then they want to find, you know, they have 10 books out there.
And she was not a best-selling author before Gone Girl came out. Her first two books did not sell well, you know. So, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, it's not necessarily – and that's the problem, the issue that publishers have. It's not marketing so much because these things just take off like a wildfire, like word of mouth, you know. And so then what they try to do is capitalize on how do I get another Gone Girl, because they didn't see Gone Girl coming. Right?
I want to try to get in a couple more calls. We've got a lot of calls here. So let's ask about – let's see. Tiffany from Dublin has a recommendation. Hello, Tiffany.
Hello.
Hi, Tiffany.
Hi.
Turn your radio down, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead.
My recommendation was Terry Pratchett, the Discworld novels. I finished The Color of Magic, which is the first one in the series, and now I am on Light.
Okay, you're breaking
definitely
up here.
Fiction.
Hang on 1 second.
I bought it at.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
You're breaking up a little.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, did you hear anything that I just said?
Light Fantastic by Terry Pratchett, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I actually got it at the Gramercy bookstore, and I wanted to make a comment on you saying, why should there be a coffee shop? You know, I think millennials don't really care about reading anymore, and getting them there makes it something social. So I went there, and I saw a bunch of young people there, and they're getting more into books. So I think that's fantastic.
Me too. That's a good point. Thank you so much for your call, Tiffany. We appreciate the recommendation. Let's try to get one more.
We're going to have avocado toast as well for the millennials.
Say it again. What?
Did you see that thing?
Yeah.
I said we're going to have avocado toast as well to get the millennials in the door.
I've never heard of avocado toast.
There was this Australian billionaire or something like that who said like millennials would be able to afford houses if they bought less avocado toast.
God love you, Eric. Only you know that. Thank you so much for recommending that. Jackie in Columbus has a recommendation. Hi, Jackie.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
My recommendation is a short book, but not just like an easy read. It's called On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century.
That actually is a quick pick. Yes.
Is it a quick pick?
Yep.
Did you talk about it already?
No. Go ahead.
And Cassie,
got it.
I loved it. I mean, it's not like an easy read. It's only about 125 pages. And you open it, it looks like it might be kind of facile, but it's not. Snyder has really concentrated a whole bunch of history into these 20 lessons. And I'm going to read it again because I believe it has information for every American.
I just picked the book up and was reading it the other night, and I just keep reading each of the lessons in it. It's very well written. He does take you back into history in a way that positions things for current times. He's not too academic. He's not too teacherly. It's very, very well written and explanatory and makes a lot of sense in the way that he explains everything. I'm glad you brought it up. I think it's a very good and important book.
And you, Robin Nesbitt, you just mentioned
it's a quick pick.
It's a quick pick. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because quick picks are not about just being bestseller. I mean, they're about what is on people's minds and what we have a lot of holds on.
Right.
So it's not just, you know, potato chip reading. It is, you know, serious literature as well. So,
I mean, how's 1984 doing? Because it was a top quick
pick. I think it's
pick.
Fallen off. You can walk in and get copies now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah.
I don't know. Handmaid's Tale.
Is still pretty pop. Yeah, that's a quick pick as well. And we talked about that last month,
too. That's
true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the new
Between 1984, yeah. Brave New World, and Handmaid's Tale, and then this, you know, mm-hmm. you can kind of see a theme erupting here. So.
Well, and what he does in this, too, is that you start to learn about communism and fascism mm-hmm. and in the mid-20th century, the Nazism, the way that it's just fascinating. And he's a historian, writer. He's, I think, a professor at Yale.
Cool.
We have time for everybody to do one more quick recommendation. Cassie Rose.
I'm going to recommend a book that's coming out in August. It's See What I Have Done. It's a debut novel by Sarah Schmidt, and it's about the Lizzie Borden story. And the reason I'm recommending it also is because every forecasting publication, Publishers Weekly, Kirkus, Library Journal, Booklist, have all given this book a star, and you rarely see that across the board.
Right. There was a lot of buzz about that book at BEA in June. Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you if it says that she did it or not.
I just got it.
Okay.
I haven't read it yet.
Don't give it away. All right. See What I Have Done, which is a novel based on the Lizzie Borden story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eric, you have another one quick?
Sure, yeah. I'm looking forward to reading the Sarah book by Scott McClanahan. We published a book of his called Crapalacia. And it did really well for us. And this book,
I'll bet it did.
Yeah, this book, the Sarah book, is just supposed to be incredible. NPR just gave it a tremendous review, calling him one of the greatest American writers of his generation.
Terrific.
And it's called the Sarah book, and it chronicles his divorce.
Hmm.
Although they call it a novel. But.
And I congratulate you again on the new bookstore. I look forward
Thank
to that
you.
In September on Parsons Avenue, complete with a cafe, but great independent books as well. Congratulations from that.
Thanks.
Robin Nesbitt, one more time.
Everybody's favorite scientist, Neil deGrasse Tyson, has written Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. So it's a slight little book about, how many pages is it? About 200 pages where you can learn about astrophysics. So, you know. Take this to the beach and you'll look really smart.
And on that note, I will thank Eric Obanoff, who is the publisher of $2 Radio here in Columbus. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And Robin Nesbitt is very, and your colleagues at the Columbus Library, very busy with opening new branches, having authors in to speak. And as always, thank you for bringing us the Quick Picks. You are the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. Hello, Greg Dodd. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted you all joining us today for All Sides Weekend Book. The producer of the program is Michael DeBonis. The assistant producer is Shyla Knott. The All Sides interns, and thank you all, Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Eric Kinkley, and Owen Doherty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Brew. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director is Mike Thompson. I'm Christopher Purdy. I'll be back at Classical 101 at 1 o'clock, so I have to go eat lunch. Thank you very much for your attention. Enjoy your day.